Hello, this is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 4th of October 2019. The extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited by Angela Ling, Carol Fraser, Jane Thomas and Sue Ganaway. And your readers today are Daphne Poupart.
Hello.
Nick Kearns.
Hello.
And Frieda Bates.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Vara Williams. Well, before we get going, I have some news. Winchester Talking Newspaper would like to introduce you, the listener, to the new memory sticks which will be used in all future recordings. In next week's wallet, you will find a white memory stick with a tag attached. The tag allows information in reference to our current postcode, should it ever be lost, and Mary Davis's telephone number for inquiries in respect to the current edition of the Talking Newspaper or magazine. Familiarise yourself with the memory stick by touch. You will find slightly raised wording, which indicates the manufacturer's name, Kingston, on the reverse side printing only. To play the memory stick using the sovereign box, hold the memory stick between your thumb and first finger, with your thumb on the raised wording side. This will allow you to insert the memory stick without causing any damage. The reason for the change is to enhance our copying process, while ensuring, hopefully, a better service to you, our listener. The Littleton and Hairstock Show has donated funds for this project, and we send our thanks to their hard-working committee for including Winchester Talking Newspaper as one of their charities this year. Now, that's a reminder. The stick will come next week, and I'm sure you will have all the instructions relayed to you once again. And so, we will go on to the Winchester Talking News. And the main headlines this week are 600-bed plan for students, hospital bidding for £550 million boost, and some progress at prison, says Watchdog. So we'll go over to Daphne, please, for the first headline.
Right, and the first headline is 600-bed plan for students. Residents of an upmarket Winchester neighbourhood have spoken of their fears over plans for a 600-bed student block after previous schemes have had, quotes, a hugely detrimental effect, close quotes, on their homes. Developers are drafting up proposals for a site next to Winchester University's main campus in Sparkford Road. The plans are understood to include land currently occupied by properties at the end of Milnthorpe Lane. Residents of the private road have seen their surroundings change over the past decade and could see this continue if the development is progressed. At Winchester City Council's full council meeting, Milnthorpe Lane resident Alison Dudgeon called for the local authority to suspend any further expansions in student accommodation developments until the local plan review is complete. Councillor Jackie Porter, Cabinet Member for Built Environment, said, "It is anticipated that the local plan will include a number of housing-related policies that respond to requirements identified, such as student accommodation. This will ensure that future proposals and any specific matters will be assessed as part of the planning application process." Ms Dudgeon went on to say, "It has had a huge detrimental effect on those of us living nearby. We are threatened with a 600-bed unit. That just can't be right." Households in Milnthorpe Lane told the Chronicle an initial meeting with an unnamed developer took place earlier this year. However, there had been no updates for months. One resident who asked not to be named said, "If we could stop it, we would. This is a very quiet residential lane and there are deep concerns. They have said access would be through the campus, but our experience is that they do not always stick to what they say." Another resident described the plan as absolutely dreadful, and there was a strong feeling in the community. A university spokeswoman said, "The university is aware of proposals to develop land in Milnthorpe Lane next to the King Alfred Quarter in Sparkford Road. We are currently waiting for detailed proposals from the developer." From time to time, the university is approached by developers with proposals for student accommodation schemes. If any developments for on- or off-campus student accommodation were to be taken forward with the university's endorsement, then there would be a full consultation with local residents and a formal planning process followed to ensure the development is appropriate to the surrounding area. St Paul Ward Councillor Martin Todd said there is a clear lack of planning policy in relation to student housing that needs to be addressed. "There is a balance to be had," said Councillor Todd. "We have had problems with not having student housing in certain places, but also cases where there have been conversions of family homes into houses with multiple occupancy, or HMOs. I know a lot of work has been done by the developer. They are trying to find ways to minimise the impact on neighbouring residents. But that is a very special part of Winchester, and you can understand why residents are so concerned." Ian Tate, a planning consultant, said, "Where better to build student accommodation? It is right next to the university."
Hospital bidding for £550 million boost. Funding to the tune of £550 million to carry out a major rebuild at Winchester Hospital could be secured by health chiefs, according to the city's MP. The trust that runs Royal Hampshire County Hospital, RHCH, has been allocated a share of £100 million in seed funding to formulate a bid for a significant investment. The initial money from the Department of Health and Social Care is part of the government's finance for hospitals on a rolling five-year basis. With the Romsey Road facility falling in the second batch of sites alongside Basingstoke and North Hampshire Hospital, BNHH, Hampshire Hospitals Foundation Trust, HHFT, will receive several million pounds to develop their business case. Winchester and Chandler's Ford MP Steve Bryan said the seed funding could lead to an eventual cash boost in the region of £550 million for the city's hospital. The former health minister said the finance presented a tangible backing from both the NHS and government in Winchester. He said, "In recent years, I've successfully lobbied for small amounts of funding, for instance, to improve the emergency department or relocate the hospital pharmacy team. They are all really important to the patient experience, but this is on a totally different scale and will secure long-term, safe and sustainable services at the RHCH. It's a huge vote of confidence in Winchester and the government and the NHS. I am regularly in the hospital, meet clinicians, management. I will look forward to working closely with the Trust as we develop plans to transform the RHCH for the benefit of my constituents over many years to come." On Monday, Mr. Bryan told the House of Commons the city was keen to get cracking with the formulating plans and asked Health Minister Edward Argar to confirm the funding was a vote of confidence in the hospital. Mr. Argar said, "I agree entirely that its inclusion in this list is a vote of confidence from us and the NHS in the work his local hospital is doing." HHFT is yet to decide what their plan will involve and did not comment on potential costs for the project. Alex Whitfield, chief executive of HHFT, which runs RHCH and BNHH, said, "I am delighted that Hampshire Hospitals has been selected as one of the trusts that will receive central funding as part of Phase 2 of the Department of Health and Social Care's Health Structure Plan. Our hospitals are in real need of investment, and we are already exploring ways that we can provide a more modern environment designed for the needs of our patients and staff, both today and in the future. This funding from the Department of Health and Social Care will enable us to accelerate this work."
Some progress at prison, says Watchdog. Winchester Prison has made progress over the past 12 months, but independent watchdogs have highlighted there are still issues which need to be addressed. The report from the Independent Monitoring Board, in brackets IE, comes just weeks after footage emerged of inmates at the prison who had broken out of their cells using kitchen utensils. The IMB said higher staffing levels and greater financial investment from June 2018 to May 2019 had led to prisoners having more scheduled time out of their cells, and efforts had been made to improve conditions of the facility. However, the report goes on to say there remains a serious risk from the continued availability of drugs and contraband, very high levels of self-harm, and buildings that are not fit for purpose. The annual review said safety had been compromised by regular instances of violence by inmates, requiring the use of force by staff. This included, on average, between 40 to 60 interventions a month. Angus Somerville, chairman of the Winchester Prison IMB, said, "In our last report, we attributed much of what was wrong with Winchester Prison to a lack of funding and resources. Today, I can say that additional investment has undoubtedly made a positive impact, resulting in many more staff, an easing of the inhumanely restricted regime, improving relationships, and a calmer atmosphere overall this year. However, the quality of the time a man spends out of his cell is important as the quantity, if not more so, and progress in that respect has been slower. The pervasive influence of drugs, violence, and self-harm, together with the inadequate environment, all serve to frustrate the undeniable efforts of the many dedicated prison staff working at Winchester. The prison was placed in special measures in early 2018 because of concerns at staffing and the conditions. Some of the challenges persist, in spite of improvements in the facility's operation and treatment of prisoners." The report said additional resources had made a positive impact, particularly in the past 4 months, and a large influx of new officers had created a generally less tense atmosphere. However, the efficiency of education provision, the scope for rehabilitation, and the take-up of purposeful activity had been lower than required. A prison service spokesman said, "We are pleased the independent monitors found significant improvements."
Here are the death notices. Boyles, Madeline Mandy Boyles. Butler, Raymond Ray Butler, after a brave battle with cancer, aged 68. Cross, Mary Cross, amongst family in York, aged 88. Gardner, Owen Ethan Gardner, peacefully, after a brave battle, aged 5. Lambert, Elizabeth Libby Lambert, aged 87. Mayers, Pollyanna Mayers, age 29. Smith, Betty May Smith, in Winchester Hospital, aged 86. Whitfield, Gordon Whitfield, headmaster of Nethercliff School, Winchester, peacefully at home. And now we will have Christian comment from Daphne.
And this comes from Liz Tatum, and it is headed Crossing the Chasm. Last Sunday, our gospel was about another Lazarus, one who had to sit under the table and wait for the scraps of bread that were meant for the dogs. Imagine that, bread that had been used as eating utensils and then thrown to the floor. That's all there was to eat. And even those dogs licked his sores. The rich man in the story doesn't receive much in the way of mercy from God when he dies and sees Lazarus by the side of the Almighty. Indeed, he is told there is a great chasm between the poor and the rich that cannot be crossed after death. That's Luke 16, verses 19 to 31. Stern stuff, and those poor are still here and living in our communities. I see them camping in fragile tents in the park in the morning, and I wonder what I can do as the weather gets colder. I see them on our streets, and I just wonder what I can do again. I expect people walked past Lazarus and their conscience stirred, but they didn't quite know what to do. There are people in our communities who have a roof over their heads, but not enough to feed their children or buy their school uniform. There is much poverty, both hidden and visible around us. There is a chasm between those of us who have enough and those who don't, and it is even greater in very poor parts of the world. So what am I going to do about it? How will I cross that chasm? Not just because the after-death judgment is severe, but these are our brothers and sisters, and we should help them now. Like many, I want to do something, but my time is taken up with so many things. Due to the great generosity of many in our community who give their time and treasure to help, we can contribute easily to the basics bank boxes in supermarkets, to the red boxes for the homeless shelters, to the various local charities who look after the elderly and families. We can volunteer to visit people, buy from charity outlets, volunteer at the basics bank. There are all manner of ways. If time or other reasons mean that giving practical help is difficult, or if we have very little to give ourselves, then we can pray, take an interest in what is going on and what others are doing. Maybe I can take a blanket and a flask of tea to the park on my next visit, or even just have a chat with the homeless who are out there. Poor Lazarus, how dreadful his life must have been. Hungry, sick, friendless, until he dies. That was then, and this is now, but he is still here, lying on the pavement in our city. I am going to try and notice him and give him what he needs as a person, so that the chasm between us is bridged.
And now we have letters to the editor, and Nick will read the first one, please.
Our first letter today is from Bill Hode, and it's entitled Lest We Forget. Sir, when Sir Colin Stansfield Smith, the county architect, designed the new record office, which was built in 1992-3, he gave the building its own space. The outline plan, printed in Schools of Thought by Richard Weston, which was published by the Hampshire County Council in 1991, shows just how he achieved the space which he deemed to be important for such a prominent public building. Behind the new building, he placed an enclosed garden with a diagonal shortcut, which has never been adequately signposted, that would lead pedestrians towards the city centre. Where this shortcut passes the building, 24 trees were planted to shade a small car park. On the actual station approach, an avenue of 22 trees running from the end of the building to the old registry office was planted. As these trees have started to mature, the building nestles comfortably within them. The current plan for station approach seems to find Stansfield Smith's achievement redundant. The trees will be gone and the once proud building will lose its space and disappear in urban sprawl and pavilions. According to the current council, the trees are Category B, downgraded because of impaired condition. For example, presence of significant, though remedial, defects, including unsympathetic past management and storm damage. We should be planting more trees, not destroying them. The importance of space and trees in towns and cities cannot be overestimated with regard to pollution, from which Winchester already suffers badly. But what are 46 trees worth when compared to three commercial pavilions, which, like many other similar sites in Winchester, will be unlet? Winchester has lost enough buildings already, and many others have been shrouded and encroached upon by development. In one of his many obituaries, the author, Geraint Franklin, wrote of Sir Colin Stansfield Smith, "would be remembered for bringing the pursuit of excellence back to the public architecture." History repeats itself, and I feel that he would be uneasy in his grave if he had wind of these new proposals. And that's from Bill Hode, Worthy Lane, Winchester.
And Paul Newman of Cranworth Road. Warning. Sir, Mark Collinson's topical Christian comment in the Chronicle of September the 19th was additionally salient with the urgent call to act locally and think globally, which Winchester Green Week makes to us all. It brings to mind a former and well-remembered occupant of the Winchester bishopric, a distinguished prophet, a visionary and scholar, John Vernon Taylor, Bishop of Winchester, 1974 to 84. He wrote a book, Enough is Enough, in 1975, published by SCM at 60 pence, which heralded an emergent environmentalist movement. He argued a theological case against a dominant consumerism, conjoined with a narrowly conceived pursuit of maximum gross domestic product, as both unjust and contrary to planetary sustainability. Isn't it appropriate that we should recall in our own day his insight and vision of 45 years ago? While Taylor acknowledges several contemporary sources, there is no reference to the epochal Word Council of Churches of 1973, Justice, Peace and the Integrity of Creation Declaration for a just, participatory and sustainable world order as a theological imperative. But both he and Collinson are consonant in principle, spirit, and with at least some of us in resolve and practice. Reverend Paul Newman, Cranworth Road, Winchester.
And the next letter is headed Climate March, and it comes from Catherine Howlett Davies. Sir, the coverage in last week's Hampshire Chronicle of the Climate March, organised by the school strikers, was not a true representation of the globally significant event which took place here on Friday, September the 20th. The photographs printed did not show the hundreds of people, young and old, who took part. And the written coverage did not do justice to the energy and determination of the young people involved. The young people who organised the march were sixth formers, and they ought to be praised for bringing together around 800 protesters, a staggering amount of people for this small city. I marched around the city with the school strikers for an hour, gathering momentum and people. Children as young as 8 years old also took part, standing up for their futures. The school strikers taught a climate song to hundreds of people and then spoke to a crowd of hundreds from the Guildhall steps. This was done by young people compelled to miss school lessons because they fear the future left to them by us grown-ups. It was awe-inspiring. Their energy and determination was fabulous to watch. We are truly in luck to have human beings such as these fighting for climate justice. And when I saw that on Friday, I knew that we will eventually win the battle to influence government and politics to take us away from this climate catastrophe. The school strikers should feel hugely proud of themselves, and I demand that the local paper give them the respect they are due. Catherine Howlett Davies, Kingsgate Road, Winchester.
The next letter is from Paula Ferguson, and it's entitled People's Vote. Sir, the Liberal Democrats have said that if we win a majority government at the next general election, we will revoke Article 50. To dispel any confusion, here are the reasons why. The Liberal Democrats have been campaigning for a people's vote for 3.5 years. Despite evidence that many have changed their minds since 2016, the Conservatives and Labour have repeatedly blocked attempts to allow the people to speak again. Therefore, we want people to know that if they elect a majority Lib Dem government at the next general election, we will revoke Article 50. Many people just want Brexit to be over. They want it to stop. Leaving the EU in any form, with or without a deal, will take years. Revoking Article 50 with a democratic mandate would provide the much needed certainty that families and businesses so urgently need. It would allow us to focus on the big issues facing us, such as taking concrete steps to address the climate emergency and the crisis in our public services. By being open and decisive about our policy, it gives the public a clear choice. A vote for the Liberal Democrats is a vote to stop Brexit. We would still prefer, and are still campaigning for, a people's vote. However, if a general election comes first, as seems increasingly likely, and we win a majority, we will revoke Article 50. It's very likely that the Conservatives will be looking for a mandate to push through a no-deal Brexit, and Labour will be looking for a mandate to negotiate a Labour Brexit deal. The Liberal Democrats provide a home for all those who want to stop Brexit altogether and remain. And that was from Paula Ferguson, the Lib Dem parliamentary candidate for Winchester and Chandler's Ford, from Cheriton Road, Fulflood.
This letter from Karen Barrett of Byron Avenue, Winchester, is headed Pot and Kettle. Sir, in her attack on Steve Brine in the Chronicle, September the 26th, Paula Ferguson, the Lib Dem parliamentary candidate, says, "Our MP has been at the heart of a government that has presided over a decade of ill-conceived cuts." This may be true, but has Miss Ferguson forgotten that in the first 5 years of that decade, we had a coalition government in which the Conservative austerity project was facilitated by Lib Dem support? I realise Miss Ferguson only joined the party after the referendum, but surely she is aware of its recent history. I would hope that she has looked at the voting records of Lib Dems in government, which enabled the increase in tuition fees, privatisation of the Royal Mail, bedroom tax, public sector pay cuts, welfare cuts, untaxed bankers' bonuses, end of renewables subsidies, and blocking a moratorium on fracking permits. If Ms. Ferguson is so concerned about the NHS, I would refer her to the Lib Dem support for the disastrous Health and Social Care Act of 2012, which has allowed private companies like Virgin Care to make billions out of NHS contracts. Steve Brine's support for such policies, which have widened the wealth gap and arguably created the conditions for the Brexit vote, is hardly surprising. He is a Tory, after all. The motives of Jo Swinson and her Lib Dem coalition colleagues are far more questionable. Karen Barrett, Byron Avenue, Winchester.
And the next letter comes from Dr. Peter Nayrood, and it's headed Not So Smart. Sir, having attended the Department of Transport's consultation over the installation of the SMART motorway from Winchester to Southampton, I came away concerned. 20,000 more vehicle movements per day on four lanes rather than three will mean that there will often be two lanes of heavy goods vehicles, and the near side will be a lane closer to houses bordering the motorway. The increase in vehicles and the closer proximity are allegedly to be offset by laying down noise-reducing road surface. Even the consultants present admitted that the term offset was unfortunate, given the extra traffic. The noise consultants have clearly been briefed to ensure that the results are neutral, to mitigate the claims for noise reduction barriers. A familiar strategy for those of us with long memories of the history of Department of Transport attempts to avoid expenditure on reducing the impact of the road, ranging from avoiding the tunnel option to arguing that the noise impact would be minimal and refusing expenditure on barriers across the valley sections. Furthermore, there is something extraordinary about a government department investing £185 million, the amount went up with every member of the consultation team we talked to, but £185 million is the latest estimate, to handle 20,000 extra vehicle movements while being legally committed to a zero emissions target by 2030. Surely the £185 million would be more appropriately spent on measures to reduce the increase in vehicle movements and thus render the SMART motorway unnecessary. This is all before we get on to the question of the first major increase in people killed and injured in serious collisions on motorways, which correlates with the rollout of the SMART motorway network and the removal of the hard shoulder. SMART motorways are not so smart. They are a convenient and cheap way to get extra road space. No planning requirements, no extra land required. They could achieve all the safety aspects and smoother speeds just by installing the gantries and the variable speed limits without needing to expand into the hard shoulder, and thereby increase traffic capacity, noise and pollution. Dr. Peter Nayrood, Place Lane, Compton.
And Hugh Lumby writes about M3 work needed. Sir, there has been much correspondence recently on the proposed improvements to the interchange between the M3 and the A34 at Winnell. Many have argued persuasively against the proposal on environmental grounds. Winchester City Council itself has prevaricated and avoided coming down on either side of the argument, once again demonstrating the indecision that is a hallmark of the new Lib Dem administration. These siren calls from the Extinction Rebellion-backed Green Lobby and the fence sitting by the council are both to be regretted. Anyone who has sat in the increasing queues on the M3 or the A34, or indeed on the approaches from the east through the Upper Meon Valley ward, will realise that the current situation is not sustainable. The cost of the lost opportunities and the resultant pollution are both self-evident. Locally, this is a major issue. It is also an issue nationally. Junction 9 is the main interchange for goods flowing from Southampton both towards London and the Midlands and the North. Likewise, it is crucial for goods flowing the other way to support the regional economy and for export. It is currently a bottleneck whose continuance will only damage and restrain growth in our area. So let's embrace this much-needed improvement and cease the opposition. With government funds limited, it would be a tragedy if the opposition to it led to the investment being made in a different part of the country. And that's from Hugh Lumby, City Councillor, Upper Meon Valley Ward, High Street, Mealstoke.
This letter from Colonel Christopher van der Noot is headed Master of St. Cross. Sir, as the step-grandson of Archdeacon Alfred Daldy, Master of St. Cross between 1927 and 1935, I must say how very proud the Archdeacon would have been of the work carried out by Reg Sweet, the current master. So, I do, of course, know just how appalled he would have been about the way that Reg Sweet is being treated. And that's from Colonel Christopher van der Noot, Oaklands Close, Winchester.
And now, a lovely letter from Tim Pattinson, and it's headed, No Need to Head to the West End. Sir, how fortunate we are to have the Chesil Theatre in Winchester. We have just attended the first night of In Praise of Love by Terence Rattigan, Chesil's latest production. Yet again, we left the theatre wondering why people would travel to the West End when there is such an excellent theatre on our doorstep. Amateurs they may be, but this was amateur dramatics at its professional best, with an impeccable cast dealing sensitively, poignantly and humorously with the complex relationships between the four protagonists in this demanding play. Another welcome Rattigan revival. Thank you, Chesil Theatre. Tim Pattinson, Church Street, Micheldever.
And that's the end of the letters. If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836, emailing news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. And now we come to what's on. Having been refurbished with a much more open and cafe-like foyer, the Theatre Royal has taken over the pages of the Chronicle's 7 days section. Here are a few shows that'll be coming in the next few weeks. Skylight by David Hare, an absorbing play, is on there on Thursday evening, the 10th of October. Tickets are £21, and on Friday, the 11th, at 1:30 p.m, the matinee, tickets will be £19. Then Five Star Swing perform Swing and Sinatra on Sunday, the 13th of October, at 5 p.m, and the tickets are £19. And on Saturday, the 26th, Griff Rees-Jones will be doing stand-up comedy at 8 p.m. Tickets £25. And the box office number for all these shows is 01962 840 440. And as well, Mendelssohn's Elijah comes to the Cathedral on the 12th of October with Thomas Allen in the title role. He's giving his services for free as are many of the other soloists and orchestra, in aid of Voices for Hospices, which raises funds for 7 Hampshire hospices. Every one of the 500 singers in the choir will pay, with the audience, £25 for the pleasure of attending the concert. And tickets can be found online at www.vfhchoir.com. Now we come to the historical. And from the files, we start with 200 years ago. That's right, Daphne.
Yes, and there are 2 short pieces on a rather similar theme. So this is 200 years ago, Monday, October the 4th, 1819. Naturalists have hitherto doubted of the existence of mermaids and mermen. We have it now in our power to set at rest the doubts of sceptics upon this duplex order of animals, one having lately been discovered bathing upon the rocks of Derry Gimla in Erisbeg, Connemara, after the ebbing of the tide. And the second very short item. The Americans have long been amusing the world with accounts of a sea serpent 1 mile in length. And now they have discovered a flounder as big as a house, according to a New York paper.
From 100 years ago, Saturday, October the 4th, 1919. Again, we've got 2 short articles. The effect of the Great Railway Strike on the food of the people and the attendant anxieties experienced by tradesmen and others concerned with supplies was reflected in the large and representative gathering of everyone interested in the food question at the Guildhall on Tuesday evening, in response to the accompanying letter issued by the Food Control Committee to all persons interested. And the second piece, St. Maurice War Memorial, which takes the form of an addition to the bells and also an oak panel containing the names of those who laid down their lives in the war, was dedicated by the Archdeacon of Winchester at a special service held in the church on Thursday evening. The 5 old bells have been for many years in a very bad condition. A new treble has now been added, this being the gift of Mr. R. Alexander, in memory of his eldest son, Douglas, who was killed in Egypt.
Now, there are 2 pieces here from 50 years ago, Saturday, October the 4th, 1969. The widespread range of the activities promoted, influenced or encouraged and assisted by Hampshire Council of Social Services was again emphasised when its annual meeting was held at the Guildhall, Winchester, on Saturday, under the chairmanship of Lord Ashburton, its president. Co-jointly, the main hall of the building was the scene of an exhibition representing phases of Hampshire local history and archaeology. It appeared that this is a field for research, discovery and comparative observation found to be of much interest by an increasing number of young people brought together through the purposes and initiative of the County Countrysides Committee and a cooperating branch of the Council for Social Services. The Council's meeting, held in the Sessions Room, opened by prayer by the Bishop of Southampton and was followed by a lunch in the Banqueting Hall and later by a conference where the day's proceedings had begun. The second piece. At a parish meeting held to discuss the proposed wildlife park at Marwell Hall, the parish hall was packed on Thursday week. Miss D. Duncan Lewis, chairman of the parish council, welcomed Mr. John Knowles, the new owner of Marwell Hall, who has applied for permission to open a wildlife park there. She explained that in view of the letter and requests for information received by the parish council, it had been felt proper that parishioners should be given the opportunity to discuss the situation, but only as it affected Twyford and its traffic problems. The parish council had been hopeful that when the new South Coast Minor Road was completed, Twyford would experience some relief from traffic. But now it was apparent that if the Marwell Hall project went through, there would be a great increase of traffic through the village, with increasing danger to pedestrians.
And now two items from 25 years ago, Friday, September the 30th, 1994. The Department of Transport has taken another step forward in its legal pursuit of £1.9 million damages from 76 Twyford Down protesters. Lawyers for the government department and some of the protesters appeared last week before Master Topley in his Strand Law Court Chambers, London. They dealt with some of the procedural matters in the case, which it is estimated could take years to be resolved. The DOT, along with Tarmac Construction and CIA Blackwell Contracts, have launched the claim for the damages based on their estimate of the losses they incurred as a result of the protests against the building of the recently opened M3 extension. Under the controversial legal principle of, quotes, joint tort feasors, close quotes, introduced into the case by Mr. Justice Alliott last year, any one of the 76 people who took part in purely peaceful demonstrations could face bankruptcy and loss of their homes because of damage allegedly committed by other protesters at a different time. The protesters have denounced the DOT actions as politically vindictive and a huge waste of public money. They estimate the case will in fact cost the taxpayer millions of pounds, the protesters having few assets to set against any bill for damages or costs. And the second item, Winchester has the sixth cleanest city centre in the whole of the United Kingdom, and that's officially very good. Hampshire's capital emerged with a high placing in the first nationwide cleanliness survey by the Tidy Britain Group. The city's dog fouling provides the only real blot on the landscape. Winchester has half as much again on top of the national average of dog fouling. The survey was carried out in May, assessing all of the UK's 57 city centres by drawing a 1 kilometre radius around their respective town halls and investigating over 12,500 specific locations. Winchester had a litter index of 76, placing it in the category of very good, beaten only by Bath, Ripon, Birmingham, Durham and Wells, but well ahead of many other heritage cities, such as Oxford, York, Chichester and Cambridge. Other surveys were also carried out, measuring other environmental factors, including dog fouling, fly posting, graffiti, vandalism and overflowing bins.
And can we have Chronicle comment, Frieda, please?
Yes, this is headed, "The Hospital Wins, the Prison Loses." The Royal Hampshire County Hospital is on the south side of Romsey Road in Winchester. The prison is on the north side, literally a stone's throw away, but they could be in different worlds. Today we report on different futures for both institutions. The local healthcare trust is preparing a bid for a financial package that could see a £500 million investment on the Winchester Hospital site. Such an eye-watering financial boost would assuage many of the concerns caused by the growing specialisation in the NHS, which is seeing some services relocate to other centres such as Basingstoke and Southampton. However, the future is not so rosy for the prison. TV viewers on Monday saw a shocking fly-on-the-wall documentary in which prison governor Stephanie Roberts-Bibby struggled to pull the jail out of special measures. The programme showed violence, drug use and staff battling to keep control. In August, inmates broke out of their crumbling cells using knives and forks. The government must invest in the prison service, even if there are few votes in it. It is the mark of assessing a civilised society.
I'll go over to Nick, please, for first person.
Which this week is titled, May I Please Have a Word? And it's by Ron Allison. Provoked by hearing the Prime Minister speaking in the House of Commons last week, a memory of childhood days came vividly to me. It is of a chant used in the face of some form of teasing or childish abuse, maybe even bullying, and as I recall, was usually remarkably effective. You just simply chanted, "Sticks and stones may hit my bones, but words can never hurt me." And the aggressor shut up. Effective maybe, but quite simply not true. Words, as we must all know, not only can hurt, but frequently do hurt, sometimes quite deeply. Politicians, of course, are on to this in a flash. Words in print, in speeches, in interviews, and particularly when uttered in the House of Commons, are the main tools of their trade. The MPs we remember best are the MPs whose words we remember best. All the more so now that Parliament is televised live as a matter of course. Is this always an advantage? I wonder what the Labour MP Barry Shearman thought when he saw the recording of himself putting question in the Commons last week. It was fury and spite totally unleashed. But back to words and to matters of taste and decency. Also, of context and the infinite possibilities offered by the English language. For example, if two people are said to have had words, the phrase is taken to mean that they have disagreed, argued, or even verbally abused each other. On the other hand, to ask to have a word would mean no more than, can I speak to you for a moment? What a difference an A makes. Context is, of course, crucial. There are clearly times when it would not be appropriate to use certain words or to express a particular point of view. When it would be wise to bite the tongue, I do not normally swear and dislike it when others do. But in the extremely unlikelihood of my doing some DIY and hitting my thumb with a hammer, the occasional curse, I have to admit, might slip out. However, that is not for any sort of general concern. But there does seem to be anxiety over a more general lowering of standards. At least the Roman Catholic Church has spoken out through Cardinal Vincent Nicol. Over the weekend, he deplored the supremacy of insults over reason. And a group of Church of England bishops called for restraint, fearing that it is possible for words to lead to actions. I'm not sure how much we are influenced by what our country's leaders think, say and do, but we can easily follow their example if we wish to do so. Their words are so readily available to us all. A recent television series about the Nazis' rise to power in the 1930s bore strong testimony to the power of the word. I cannot think of any reason for admiring Hitler in any way, but he certainly knew how to raise a rabble. It was quite terrifying to watch the newsreels from 80 or more years ago. The power of the word. Fortunately, for us and for freedom, we were led by a man who knew better than anyone how to harness the force of the word. Sir Winston Churchill was surely the foremost of all political orators. So we all, in the home, in the workplace, or even in solitude, are in this world of words. Choose ours carefully could well be our watchword.
And we come to Belgarum, an alternative look at the news. And there's a lovely picture of a large openwork metal fish standing in an open space in the middle of Winchester. It says, "Meet the city's new big fish. Recycle your plastic bottles and aluminium cans. Don't leave them to salmon else." When out and about, Belgarum bumped into Nelson the Final Fat Fish, a huge metal structure that shoppers could dump their empty drink cartons in to raise awareness of the single-use containers we use. The project, set up by Solent-based charity The Final Straw, has travelled to festivals, parks and towns across the country. Nelly, as the fish is more affectionately known, is a whopping 6 metres long and made entirely from scrap metal, including wheel arches, old boat trailers, the frames from old warehouse trolleys, and old chicken wire. You better believe it, it says. Yes, I can see the eye is a tyre from a car or something like that at the top, and it looks very good, and it's got quite a lot of cans and things dumped at the bottom of it. And the second one is the pothole set for rapid winter expansion. A contender for the worst pothole in Winchester. This monster has been developing in Lower Brook Street over several months, if not years. And the picture of it makes it very large and very deep. The authorities are aware, as both this one and a slightly smaller one yards down the road have painted markings next to them, indicating the area that is due for replacement. Lower Brook Street is a cul-de-sac, so traffic speeds will be relatively low. But still, time to get it fixed, surely. Winter is coming, and with it frost that will rapidly enlarge the problem. And with that, we move on to lighting up times, which are rapidly going later and later. Lighting up time ends today, Friday, the 4th of October, at 7:10 a.m. and begins again at 6:37 p.m. On Wednesday, the 9th of October, it ends at 7:18 a.m. and begins again at 6:26 p.m. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Mary Davis on 01962 711 998. That's 01962 711 998. And now we continue with further items of general news. Daphne.
And the first item is headed "Council Slammed Over Bins Change." Civic chiefs have been criticised for their new waste collection scheme after leaving thousands of residents in the dark about updated service times. The City Council's new timetable for all 54,000 homes across the district, which now includes curbside glass collection, started on September the 30th. But many people were left completely unaware, as the letters and calendars to explain the new arrangements were not delivered, quotes, "due to distribution issues," close quotes. Former City Council leader, Councillor Caroline Horrell, said, "We know that this type of change needs meticulous attention to detail. Implementation of the new contract has been the responsibility of the new Lib Dem administration, and in particular, Councillor Linda Murphy. Residents do not know which bin to put out on which days. It should be so straightforward to inform us all. What a mess. Is Councillor Murphy perhaps spending too much time trying to get elected as an MP in Eastleigh to have time for something as mundane as letting people know when their bins are due to be collected? The timetables were uploaded to the council's website on September the 27th, which was criticised by the councillor for Central Meon Valley, Vicky Weston. She said, Councillor Lucille Thompson, leader of the council, declared at full council on September the 25th that they are the transparent administration. Yet, less than 48 hours after it had become transparent that they have failed to let residents know that the bin collection timetable has changed. What a shambles. A council spokesman said, we know this has caused some confusion and frustration for some residents. We are very sorry, as we know how important it is that we collect bins on time. The new calendars are on their way and should arrive by the end of the week, but we would urge people to check their new collection day and download their collection calendar online.
The title of the next piece is More Work Needs to be Done Over Brexit and Ports. Winchester MP Steve Brine has pressed the government over post-Brexit problems on county roads. He raised the issue of delays at the ports, which prompted the county council to revamp the A31 earlier this year between Winchester and Alsford, should there be a backlog of lorries heading for Portsmouth. During a House of Commons session, Mr. Brine, the independent former Tory MP for Winchester, asked Mr. Gove, Chancellor of the Duchy of Lancaster, what preparations and investment had been made in Portsmouth and Hampshire to guarantee supply chains. He said that concerns had been raised by his constituents, particularly about lorries being parked on the M27 and A31 roads due to increased customs checks. Whether Portsmouth will be able to cope with the additional burden should new border checks create backlogs in ports post-Brexit has been a long-standing concern. In response to Mr. Brine's question, Mr. Gove said, my honourable friend makes a very important point. Portsmouth is one of our most important ports. It is important for a host of reasons, and for the commercial life of this nation, for access to medical supplies, and, of course, for access to our Crown dependencies and the Channel Islands. It is the case that we need to work closely with the Local Resilience Forum in Hampshire to ensure that it understands that our modelling assumptions are and take appropriate steps. I know that it is the case that both the Secretary of State for Transport and the Secretary of State at the Ministry of Housing, Communities and Local Government have been in touch with the LRF recently, but obviously more work needs to be done. Currently, the UK is due to leave the European Union on October the 31st, unless an extension is requested and granted. Prime Minister Boris Johnson has been consistently adamant that Brexit will take place at the end of this month. And that article is accompanied by two photos. One, an aerial sketch of the A31, the planned truck park, and another, a rather nice aerial photograph of Portsmouth Harbour with the docks in the foreground and ports downhill in the middle distance.
This piece is headed New Station Car Park Would Be Destructive. Residents fear that a new train station car park in Mitcheldever could destroy their community. South Western Railway are looking to buy the land behind New Road to accommodate 150 new spaces, but will face backlash from locals if they succeed. One New Road resident, Ruth Wardell, said, the neighbourhood was completely in the dark about the plans until they saw somebody surveying the land around 2 weeks ago. She added, That green space has been allotments and an area for the children to play for around 100 years. There's huge biodiversity there, and it just doesn't make sense to destroy the environment for something that seems unnecessary. I'm convinced they have no real data to show that we need another car park, because there's never been anywhere near 150 cars needing to park at the train station. She added, "My kids play there, and so do my neighbours' kids. It's not just about destroying the allotments. It would destroy our community. And for what? Something that benefits people who don't even live here. The nearest park is the other side of the tracks, so where else will they play? We need to protect the environment, not destroy it." Ruth also said how a car park would be an eyesore from her back windows, and that most people using the train station are dropped off rather than drive themselves. Her concerns were raised at the last meeting of Winchester City Council. Cabinet Member for Environment, Councillor Linda Murphy, responded, "We have been aware for a while of the problem of too many people trying to park at the station. South West Railway are looking at options to address the problem there. Any parking proposals will need planning permission." A spokesman for South West Railway said, "Following concerns from stakeholders, local residents and the MP, we are looking at all options to address station car parking issues around Mitchell Dever Station."
The next item is headed Cycle Cafe Designed by Teens Opens Doors. Winchester's highly anticipated community project is open for business following an official launch on Sunday. The Handlebar Cafe and Bike Workshop is the brainchild of a group of local teenagers who, 5 years ago, worked with SPUD to design a bicycle-themed eatery on the old railway track over Garnier Road. More than 1,000 people attended the ceremony, and the five teenagers cut the ribbon with the Mayor of Winchester. One of the teenagers, Joshua Snow, said, "It's such a strange feeling being able to stand there and look at something that was just an idea a few years ago and has now become such an amazing project. I've learnt so much from being part of this and really looking forward to starting my degree in architecture." And it's accompanied by a picture of the five young students, really more than teenagers now. They're lovely, handsome-looking boys, and they're cutting the tape with the mayor, and everyone looks absolutely delighted.
Officers seize haul of £1.3 million from criminals. Police in Hampshire recovered more than £1 million in criminal cash and assets last year, new figures reveal. Hampshire Constabulary collected proceeds of crime worth £1.3 million in 2018-19, according to the latest Home Office data, which includes dirty money, goods and property. Of this, £1.176 million, 91%, came from confiscation orders, which take place following a criminal conviction but will be started before sentencing. The remainder came from powers to seize cash in civil proceedings. The overall haul was higher than the value seized in the previous year, with an increase of 31% from £988,334. Detective Chief Inspector Justin Torgu, head of Hampshire's Economic Crime Unit, said, "We pursue the seizure of criminal assets when we can see that people convicted of offences have benefited from illegal activity. By using confiscation powers available to us under the Proceeds of Crime Act 2002, we will do everything we can to ensure that crime does not pay. Hampshire Constabulary won't stop at trying to secure jail terms for those who think they can line their pockets with illegal income. Eventually, we will make them pay it back." And that article is also accompanied by a photograph of a bunch of policemen dressed in flak jackets and helmets battering a door down.
This piece is entitled Anger Over Hedge Removal. Frustrated residents have questioned why the City Council has planted a selection of small plants 10 months after condemning established hedges. The entrance to Orchard Close in Colden Common had been bordered by Leylandii hedges for many years until Winchester City Council instructed contractors to remove them completely. Residents claim the move is a substantial waste of money and described it as totally unnecessary. John Boys has led the campaign on behalf of residents and started a petition calling for WCC to address the issue. The residents of Orchard Close are devastated because the route into their properties has lost all of its character, said Mr. Boys. No one here wanted this to be done, and we were not told or asked about it. We had complained that the hedges were out of control and needed to be trimmed back, but they condemned them. Councillor Tony Bronk, representative for Colden Common and Twyford Ward, said he was disappointed by the lack of effective communication from the council with residents. And there is a photograph. There are five residents, including Mr. Boys, standing looking extremely cross in front of a very large flower bed with a few small plants dotted around and a lot of bare soil.
City Council vote confirms scheme for station approach. Civic chiefs have agreed to commit to a £5 million scheme to launch the redevelopment of the station approach in Winchester. The council is working on a £150 million redevelopment and has gained £5 million from the local enterprise partnership for improvements to the public realm. There have been concerns about having to pay a clawback to the LEP if the scheme does not progress quickly enough. But at full council, wider fears were raised. Councillor Kim Gottlieb, whose judicial review derailed the first Silver Hill scheme in 2016 and also opposed the first station approach proposal, tried to speak against the scheme. He said, granting outline consent for a building as large and as tall as the Brooks Centre on a strategic site is not good practice. Even less appropriate is the plan to sell the site in such a way that we will have virtually no control over how the design and specification of the building is finalised. But he was unable to continue his speech because the Mayor, Eleanor Bell, said it strayed beyond the details of the report, which was solely about the LEP money. Tory group leader Caroline Horrell said, "The opportunity to get the grant from the LEP is very significant. The public realm improvements are much needed at station approach." Councillor Thompson said, "The LEP money is a tremendous vote of confidence in Winchester." 35 councillors voted in favour of the LEP money being used. Councillor Gottlieb voted against, and 6 Lib Dems abstained. And it's accompanied by artist's impression of how the proposed new offices will look. They are quite tall in reddish-looking brick and square and sort of block-like.
Alsford celebrates 150th anniversary of Bishop's Gift. It has been 150 years since the Bishop of Winchester gave the avenue to Alsford townspeople. Residents and local organisations celebrated the anniversary with the current bishop, the Right Reverend Tim Dakin, in attendance. He planted a tree to mark the occasion and gave a speech to attendees. In 1869, Bishop Charles Sumner handed the open land and trees to the town, and there were strict terms attached to the gift. The land was to be used for the recreation of the inhabitants of the town and for no other purpose whatsoever. The event on Friday, September the 20th, organised by the owners, Alsford Town Trust, was a showcase of Alsford's voluntary organisations, including the Giles Group, the Pigs, Friends of the Isle, Alsford Men's Shed, Churches Together and the Voluntary Care Group. There was a portable bell tower brought on site and a vintage vehicle display was held alongside a number of craft stalls. Refreshments were provided by the Women's Institute. And that's also attached by three photographs from the event. One showing the Right Reverend Tim Dakin holding above his head a framed, what looks like a framed letter, which I assumed must have been the one that Bishop Sumner wrote when he donated the avenue to the town of Alsford.
Student drowned in city swimming pool. A university student died after drowning in a Winchester swimming pool, an inquest heard. Zhao Jing Zheng, 25, had been swimming at the deep end at River Park Leisure Centre on June the 17th last year, when she became incapacitated and submerged underwater. Despite resuscitation attempts, the Winchester School of Art student died at Royal Hampshire County Hospital the following morning. Footage played at Winchester Coroner's Court showed Mrs. Zheng had not moved on the floor of the pool for several seconds before lifeguards were alerted by another swimmer. The inquest heard at the time of the incident, lifeguards alternated every 5 seconds between monitoring a screen with images from 8 underwater cameras and observing their own designated area of the pool with their own eyes. Safety consultant Andrew Eben told the inquest this approach to lifeguard observation was common in the industry, but it was extremely difficult to frequently switch from distance vision looking at the pool to close vision on the camera monitor. Recording a conclusion of accidental death, Senior Coroner Graham Short said there were unrealistic expectations for lifeguards to view the 8 images for 5 seconds and then the pool for 5 seconds. I believe he, Mr. Eben, is absolutely right, said Mr. Short. Simply to assimilate those images and what you are seeing with your own eyes is all but impossible. It does seem, however, to be an industry norm, and I do accept that this is a situation which is evolving significantly and has evolved since this sad incident. The inquest heard Ms. Zheng, who lived in Athelstan Road, Winchester, sank to the bottom of the pool and went into cardiac arrest. She was spotted by a fellow swimmer who alerted lifeguard Sam Manley. He sounded the alarm, dived in to rescue Ms. Zheng, but she was not breathing, the inquest heard. Staff started CPR and called for an ambulance before using a defibrillator. Ms. Zheng's heart was started after 22 minutes, but she went into cardiac arrest again. She was taken to hospital and died at around 7:30 a.m. on June the 18th. Professor Gavin Perkins, clinical care medicine expert, told the hearing that based on the CCTV footage, he believed Ms. Zheng probably suffered a sudden irregular heartbeat, a cardiac dysrhythmia, which led to her drowning. Pathologist Adnan Al-Badri provided a cause of death of multiple organ failure caused by hypoxic brain injury due to submersion in a swimming pool. A statement from River Park Operators, Places for People Leisure Management Limited, said, "We thank the coroner for his attention and take the comments in his conclusion about Ms. Zheng's sad death very seriously. We are committed to learning lessons arising from the outcome of the inquest. We have already implemented actions that will improve standards and safety for all our pools. The underwater camera system has been enhanced at every leisure centre, and we have retrained all our staff. We manage 71 pools at our leisure centres and give the highest priority to safety, always striving to provide high standards of care for everyone.
Endangered zebra foal born at Marwell. An endangered Grevy's zebra foal has been born at Marwell Zoo. Born on the 26th of September to mother Nafisa, the foal's gender and name has yet to be confirmed, as the mother and foal are spending time socialising with each other and the rest of the female zebras in the group. Marwell's conservation biologist, Tania Langenhorst, said, "It's so lovely to see the foal taking its very first foray out into the field and running around with mum and the other females. Often people don't realise how rare this particular species of zebra is. There are fewer Grevy's zebra left in the wild than black rhino, so we are incredibly lucky to see them here in Marwell." The Grevy zebra is the most endangered of all three species, with fewer than 3,000 individuals left in the wild. And that is accompanied by a beautiful picture of the mother and the foal on her long, or his or her, long spindly legs. They look really sweet together.
The title of the next piece is Smoke Free. A Winchester hospital is now completely smoke-free. As part of a new campaign, no smoking is allowed on the grounds of any of the hospitals run by the Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust from Tuesday, October the 1st. This includes the Royal Hampshire County Hospital to make sure that patients, visitors and staff are not exposed to cigarette smoke on their way in or out. Vaping and e-cigarettes will continue to be allowed to be used in outdoor spaces away from entrances and windows. The Trust's drive to become smoke-free coincides with the start of Stoptober, Public Health England's annual Stop Smoking event, and Hampshire Hospitals is supporting patients, visitors and staff who would like to give up. Nicotine replacement products will be available for patients on the wards and can be bought from the outpatient pharmacies at both Basingstoke and North Hampshire Hospital and the RHCH. The Trust is also encouraging smokers to sign up with the Hampshire Stop Smoking Service if they would like to give up. After smoking on or off for more than 25 years, Terry Chivers, an administrator and receptionist at the Trust, gave up on June the 10th with the help of the Stop Smoking Service. She said, "I would not have been able to do it without them. They have lots of different options in terms of nicotine replacement therapy. I have found the weekly meetings really helpful."
The Harvest Festival returns to the Cathedral this weekend. The traditional harvest celebrations at Winchester Cathedral return this year, this weekend, with a new feel and new partners. As well as the traditional stalls from agricultural representatives, the newly styled Green Hampshire Harvest Weekend invites visitors to reflect upon the impact of climate change. It comes at the end of Winchester Green Week, a series of events around the district designed to increase awareness locally. New this year is the Big Top Marquee, sponsored by Winchester University. The marquee will host talks and displays from Winchester University, Sparsholt College, WINAC, that's the Winchester Action on Climate Change, Winchester Green Week, and many others. Bees are a key focus of the event, and the School of Art has made a giant bee from recycled products to hang on the side of the cathedral. The festival will again feature independent producers and members of Hampshire Fair and give insight into one of the most important aspects of the economy. There is a marvellous photograph at the front of Winchester Cathedral And lots of people are standing around enjoying a demonstration by King John's Morris men. They look absolutely splendid. But the photo was taken in 2015. So perhaps they will have a new one after this weekend.
Society get in costume for upcoming show. The cast of Winchester Musical Operatic Society's upcoming show visited the Black Boy pub to begin promotion. Jekyll and Hyde, based on the novel by Robert Louis Stevenson, will be performed in aid of Winchester Hospice in November. It is the gothic tale of a young scientist, Henry Jekyll, who, in trying to rid the world of evil, accidentally creates an alter ego in the murderous Edward Hyde. At the pub, they were joined by Ewan McMorris, owner of Portcullis Construction and St. Cross Kitchens, who are sponsoring the show. Jekyll and Hyde will be performed from November the 6th to November the 9th at the Theatre Royal in Winchester. The first formal meeting of the Winchester Musical Operatic Society was called by Mr. Whitwam and Mr. Ellesmere on November the 22nd, 1912, and the group was given its first official name and a committee appointed to draw up the rules. More than 100 years later, members look to put on shows at least once a year. Their last show, Made in Dagenham, ran at the same theatre back in May and was a hit. People looking to get involved with the society should visit their website. And there are some splendid pictures accompanying it of the cast in their Victorian costumes, looking absolutely horror-struck. They've obviously seen something rather unpleasant, and we would have to go and see it to see what that is.
Samaritan's Day. Winchester Samaritans are set to hold an event for World Mental Health Day next week. Members of the charity, supported by Network Rail staff, are set to put on Real People, Real Stories at the railway station on October the 10th. Backed by the World Health Organization, the objective is to raise awareness of mental health issues and suicide. Director of Winchester Samaritans, Anne Marie Drummond, said, "There is still a stigma around seeking help when we are struggling with mental health problems." Samaritans launched its Real People, Real Stories campaign earlier this year, in which high-profile figures have talked about their own battles with mental health and how talking with a friend or a family member has made a huge difference to their life. At our event, we are hoping to encourage people to talk more openly to friends and family about mental health issues and to reduce the stigma that still surrounds the subject. The event will run between 10 a.m. and 3 p.m. and that was on the 10th of October.
There's going to be a revamp for dementia support services. A new service to support carers and residents with dementia in Hampshire has been launched. The 133,000 adult carers and 12,400 residents living with dementia across the county can now access a new service which will provide them with one-to-one assistance, either over the phone Monday to Friday from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., online or face-to-face with a trained carer, support worker or dementia advisor at a time that is convenient for the person needing assistance. They can also receive general information and advice either online or over the phone and at 10 local carer support groups held across Hampshire. The new service has been commissioned by Hampshire County Council, NHS West Hampshire Clinical Commissioning Group and the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Partnership of Clinical Commissioning Groups and is provided by Andover Mind. The County Council said there has been no merger but said the new service unites several services that had been commissioned separately It stressed there hasn't been any job loss and no savings will be made. A spokesperson added, "This represents continued better use of public resources, as greater coordination means we can ensure people get the support they need. For the public, this provides a one-stop shop, making it easier and quicker to access support. For commissioners, it represents a better use of public funds. Jointly commissioning a single service also improves the links and consistency of services between adult social care and health partners." Councillor Liz Fairhurst, Executive Member for Adult Social Care and Health at Hampshire County Council, said, "It is vital that we support the county's carers and those living with dementia in the best possible way. People need to be able to access help quickly and easily, so we've brought together the various support services that were previously provided separately by the County Council and our health partners. By doing this, we are using our collective resources in a much more efficient way." Maggie McIsaac, Chief Executive for Hampshire and Isle of Wight Partnership of CCGs, that is, County Commission, so hang on, Clinical Commissioning Groups, CCGs, said, "Carers often are unpaid family members or friends, looking after those with long-term physical and mental health conditions, while juggling their own career, family life and health. By working with our partners at Hampshire County Council and Andover Mind, we are able to offer people crucial support, guidance and information to help them with their caring commitments." There is a photograph, it's a rather charming one, with a very loving, gentle hand resting on top of a much older hand holding a walking stick.
And that concludes the extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, Angela Ling, Carol Fraser, Jane Thomas and Sue Gadaway. Thanks to our copying, dispatch and studio presentation teams. And thanks to our readers, Daphne Poupart.
Goodbye.
Nick Kearns.
Goodbye.
And Frieda Bates.
Goodbye.
And from me, Vara Williams, goodbye and do have a good week. Please post your memory sticks, the last time that you'll be getting to use these particular ones, back as soon as possible in the yellow wallet. And when you put your label inside, please make sure the cord attached to the memory stick is fully inside the wallet as well. Thank you.